And so today I was going to give a little talk on the values of Buddhism and just actually how powerful they are, lessening the pain and difficulties and stress of life. And what I mean by values, what are those Buddhist values? In a nutshell, thinking about what values are, it's what I really worship and think are most important. And this is tying up with a question which somebody asked me just before I came in here, which was that when you bow as a Buddhist, what the heck are you doing? How many times should you bow? How should you bow? And all those sorts of questions are part of Buddhist ritual. And if you want to know how to bow, just look at someone else bowing and see if you can do better than they're doing. That's about as much advice as I can give you. But it's not so much the physical action, it's what you're doing it for. And I said once again that when I bow, usually three times, the first thing I bow to is virtue, goodness. And the second thing I bow to is peace. And the third thing I bow to is compassion, kindness. And this is why I bow, because by bowing to those qualities, I am literally worshipping them. By putting my head down, I'm holding these things so high above me that I respect and value them as more important than my own personal desires and needs. So I formally do an act of valuing virtue, peace and compassion. And what that does psychologically, every time I remember that I'm bowing to virtue, peace and compassion, I am increasing their value. I'm strengthening them. I'm making them more important in my life. I'm actually reminding myself these are really valuable things and they become the values of my life. To live a life which puts such a high price on goodness, on peace and compassion, that they become the guiding principles to whatever I do and however I do it. So I just try my very best to be a good, virtuous monk. And what do you mean by a good or virtuous monk? Or nun, or layman, or good or virtuous dog, or whatever. And dogs are virtuous sometimes, just the amount of kindness and goodness which they can show you. And what we really mean by that is just, you know, these qualities where we're not just thinking of ourselves. And as I've pointed out in Buddhism, we're not just thinking of the other either. Being a good person is not just always seeing how much we can help another person. And I think that was one of the great faults, reason why charity work, kind work or whatever, the so-called what cynics call the do-gooders in life, why they get into so much trouble. Because there is a fault there in their virtue. Just seeing how much we can help, we can care for another person is missing a point. And what's that point it's missing? You. Which is why that being good is not about so-called being selfless, nor about being selfish. It's realizing this wonderful Buddhist principle that being good is always about a relationship you have with the person in front of you. It's a relationship you have with the situation you happen to be in. It's not about me, it's not about them, it's always about us. Goodness is how we can best care and have goodwill, not towards you, not towards me, but goodwill towards us. And that idea of virtue, where we have this extra little piece of wisdom and compassion in, it's always about how we can do better, how we can solve our problems. How we can be kind to one another. How we can be kind to one another, going backwards and forwards. Because I know that sometimes people ask me about, they may be in a managerial position in their office, and there's some person there who's not working very well. Should you give them the sack? Should you ask them to leave? And of course, sometimes that's what you have to do, for it's unkind to them, but it needs to be done for us. They're in the wrong position. They're just harming yourself and the other people in the company. Sometimes they need to be very kindly, very caringly, just say this is the wrong place for you. So I told those CEOs, because I do actually quite a lot of work in that area these days, it seems, having abandoned all the world, abandoned money, having no idea of what the economy is, but still being able to talk to business leaders about how to run their companies, simply because sometimes we need to value what we call goodness and understand what goodness really is, and understand that when people practice goodness and they leave themselves out of the equation, they're trying to be good to this employer, good to their children, good to their wife, their husband, their parents, but forgetting about themselves. There's something missing there, and I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people in Australia think that being good doesn't work. Being good does work if you know how to do it. So of course, as a monk, hopefully you think I'm a good monk, I'm a virtuous monk. But sometimes, like even today, someone asked me, or it was a telephone call, can you please give some time to give like some counseling on an interview to this person? And I said, look, you know, very good, I'd love to do that, but I've got only a certain amount of time. And some of that time has to go towards Ajahn Brahm as well. I remember I count. I'm a human being amongst all other human beings. When I say, may all human beings be happy and well, I also remember myself as well. So I also give myself some time, because I've seen many times that when people are what they think is selfless, what happens then is they get burnt out by giving, giving, giving until they've got so little energy left that when they do give, they become grumpy. Why do people become grumpy and angry? Simply because they get burnt out, they get tired, they've got nothing left to give. So to be good, you also have to be good to yourself, good to others. You also count. So in that goodness, it's just basically caring for both parties. That degree of virtue, I remember just taking a group of, I think it was about year three or year fours, who came to our temple when it was still in North Perth many years ago. And the teacher brought these kids to me. I got loaded with them. Can you please teach our kids Buddhism? Something. And of course it's always really difficult, you know, when you know you learn Buddhism sort of in a place like Thailand, you know all about Four Noble Truths and dependent origination and all these very complicated subjects, but how can you teach year 3 or year 4 year olds Buddhism? And so, you know, I was thinking what I could do, and then I just remember, just like goodness, what is goodness? So I asked the kids, what is goodness? What does goodness mean? And for them it was a little bit difficult to start off with, so I gave them a little hint. Well, what's being bad? Tell me what's being bad. And it was interesting, the children could explain what being bad was much easier than what was being good was. But nevertheless, that was the start. What was being bad? They said, well, no, hurting one another, saying rude things about one another, lying, cheating, stealing. And after a few minutes, with a tiny bit of encouragement, I got these kids learning about the five precepts, especially year threes. Is drinking alcohol good? Say, no, no, when daddy gets drunk, it's terrible. And actually, these are little kids, they're very smart and they're very wise. They can see things which other people can't see because they haven't been taught what to believe. These are just beautiful, fresh minds. So after a few minutes, I got these kids understanding the Buddha's five precepts of not to deliberately kill, steal, commit adultery. Even committing adultery, I remember asking this kid, sort of, you know, is committing adultery good? They understood what it was. Never underestimate your kids' knowledge of sex. They're very smart, much smarter than you think. It's a general rule, I think you can practice that. And I said, well, what's wrong with sort of adultery? And the kids said, well, mummy and daddy just, they leave each other, they get angry. And that hurts me. And so the kids were saying that. And they said, what happens if they get divorced? And they said, that's even worse. So because I need two parents. I remember this child said, I need two parents. I said, why? So, well, when one gets angry at me, I've got another one to go to. Very beautiful little wisdom. That's why a kid needs two, because sometimes they don't get on with one of them, they get into trouble. They've always got another one who can love them and show that they care. So two is much better than one there. But it was beautiful to see how these little children, just when you encourage them, actually can see what was bad. And from that seeing what was bad, you know, basically the five precepts, they could understand what goodness was. You know, good wisdom is making sure these bad things never happen. And how don't they happen? Just by being kind and caring to one another. And it's not just being kind and caring to others, it's also being kind and caring to them, because they count as well. And so it was very easy to teach about 7 or 8 year olds Buddhism. Sometimes it's much easier to teach them than to teach you guys. Because they have a much more stronger feeling of emotions, of experience. And sometimes when you get older, you tend to live in your head too much. And instead of actually understanding what goodness and virtue is, you start to philosophize about it and to see whether there is a value system or whether it's relativism or whatever else. And sometimes people get so complicated, they lose the simplicity of just feeling things with the heart rather than trying to discover them with your head. So we understand what goodness is. And you know, a nice thing about goodness is that goodness is fun. Virtue is happiness. It gives you a lot of freedom and peace. To understand what you mean here, there's an old story from Opening the Door of Your Heart. I haven't told for many years here. It was a story of these two monks who were at a person's house waiting for the meal, and they were sitting down there talking to one another. Just even today I was at a meal in a person's house down in Port Kennedy and had a lot of time just to talk with each other while we were waiting to be fed. You know, just sometimes I feel like I'm just one of these animals in a zoo when you have to wait for feeding time. But nevertheless, I enjoy it. But at this particular time, that they were waiting there, and they were just talking because there was an aquarium, a fish tank in the person's house. And they started getting into this little discussion. Is having a fish tank in a person's house, is that the right thing a Buddhist should do? Putting these fish in jail. Because that's what it's like. They can't go swimming wherever they want. Putting fish in this little box full of water, swim backwards and forwards. What bad karma did a fish do to have to live like that, just for your pleasure? Shouldn't you go and free those fish if you got them in an aquarium, you bad Buddhists? That's what he was saying, because this was in a Buddhist house. And the other monk was much smarter, and he said, hang on a bit. He could see a lovely simile in this. He said, no, actually, those fish in an aquarium are very, very fortunate. He said, why? He said, because think of this. If those fish were in the lakes or in the rivers, number one, they'd have to be afraid of fishermen. Every time they saw a nice juicy worm, they would not know whether there was a hook inside that worm or not. Now imagine that was you. Every time you had lunch or dinner, you didn't really know whether that would be your last meal. Now that would give you such anxiety, you probably, you know, have bad indigestion and have to go and see a therapist. Unfortunately, fish don't have therapists, so they just have to deal with the anxiety. I think that most fish are probably paranoid because of the danger of being hauled out of your environment just because you, you know, bite into a tasty worm or fly. So imagine what it's like for a fish in the wild. It must be terrifying. However, if you're a fish in an aquarium in somebody's house, that's one thing you never need to be afraid of. I've never seen once a fisherman dropping a line in the aquarium of somebody's house. You're totally safe. So that's the first thing. The fish are free of the danger of fishermen. And he went further. It's not just fishermen who are going to be a danger. No, in nature. In nature, you've got the bigger fish eating the smaller fish. But people don't do that in an aquarium. They don't put big fish with small fish. They put fish who can get on together. So that's the second freedom, that the fish in an aquarium don't need to worry about being attacked by bigger fish. They're actually quite safe. And number three, you know, I've just seen just in the newspapers, you know, my home place in London, it's frozen over with snow. I don't know how those fish in the River Thames or the lakes are going to survive. It must be so chilly in there. In other places like Adelaide, it's really hot. But fish in an aquarium, it's like living in air-conditioned rooms. Because the water is a constant temperature all year round. That must be so wonderful and so comfortable for those fish. Even me, living monastery, we don't have air con. I think last week when I was here, it was so hot, Fortunately, we have an aircon in the office, so I was sitting in there just waiting to go last Sunday. It's the only cool place in the whole Vihara, and the library as well, but not allowed in there on Sunday, but never mind. But it's great if you're a fish. It's like living in an air-conditioned or heated place all year round. I mean, that's very hard for a fish to find such quarters. It's like living in a penthouse, and obviously got a very nice view as well. And not only that, the fish in the aquarium, not fish in the wild. Like sometimes there are droughts, which means there's not much water. Sometimes floods, you don't know where you're swimming. And also sometimes they won't get enough food. It's great in an aquarium. You get fed. I've never had a fish in the aquarium. Once a day, twice a day, three times a day. You don't have to worry about your food. It's like, and don't even have to chase it. It's like brought to. It's like having takeaway delivered three times a day if you're a fish in an aquarium. And best of all, fish in an aquarium have free health care. If they get sick, the owner gets a fish doctor or whatever it is to come and make sure you're healthy pretty quickly. Fish in the wild, they've got no doctor, no health care at all. They get sick, just tough luck. So when you described all the advantages of being a fish in an aquarium, the other monk realized, actually, if I was a fish, I'd rather be in an aquarium, safe and comfortable, than being free in nature with all these fears and dangers. So if you were a fish, which type of fish would you like to be? Many people say, I'd rather give away those freedoms to swim wherever I want, in order to have this freedom from pain and suffering. In the same way that many wise people feel, it's better to be good and live in this aquarium bounded by things like five precepts, not harming other people, simply because I am free from so many dangers. And certainly in my life I realize that just goodness, kindness, being reliable, honest, these are things which actually protect me from so many dangers. And because they protect you from so many dangers, they create so much peace and happiness in this world. So, I've often said, just, if you want a good time, be good. So, I often say, I'm a good time monk. Sometimes people, how do you mean a good time monk? You go to bars, you go to pubs? I say, no, you don't go to bars or pubs. Well, I remember once going into a pub, I'm going to confess now, there was a hotel in Pinjarra. And I was invited there many years ago to the Rotary Club to give a talk on Buddhism. I know you go and give these talks to these public clubs, but I didn't realize that when they said hotel, that meant pub. It just came to Australia. And you always think there would be like a door around the back so you can just get into the meeting rooms. But when I asked, they said, no, there's only one way to the meeting rooms. That was right in the front door past all the other bars. And I thought, my goodness, what should I do? So I didn't have any choice. I promised to go to that meeting. So I stood in front of the pub, head down, and made a dash for the back room. That's what I did. And I went there, head down, not looking left or right, hoping I could make it to the end room. But I almost made it. It was only about 5 meters from the door of the meeting room. And someone grabbed me by the shoulder. You must be the monk. Come over to the bar and have a drink. I said, no, no. I said, I have an orange juice, I have it in there. So I managed to escape just about. An interesting life as a monk, all these little things which happen to you. But anyway, so there are, you try and keep out of these places, then you live a good life and a very happy life. And a good example for those of you who are at Ajahn Brahm's New Year's Eve party, you had a good time. I got some very good reports. You enjoyed yourself with no alcohol. Good people having a good time. So actually virtuous people have a much happier, better time. So that's why a virtue goodness. It's not only you have a happier time, that you give what we call the gift of fearlessness to the world. What do we mean by that? Other people realize that they can be safe in your presence. They realize this, a Thai tradition. I noticed this today, that sometimes when there's a monk in the room and they go out to the toilet, they go out to have something to eat themselves, they leave all their handbags and purses in our presence because they know that when there's a monk around, no one will steal it, and it's totally safe. And it's one of the reasons also that sometimes some of these, you know, men who are afraid of what their wives get up to when they leave home, and they hear they're going to the monastery, they're going to the monastery, that's fine, you're safe. They're very safe in a monk's hands. Well, not, you know, literally in my hands, but I mean, you know, in the area where you are. I've got to be careful what I say sometimes. That's metaphorically speaking. So that when you're a good person, other people don't have any fear of you. They don't fear they're going to be cheated, going to be robbed, going to be attacked. And that's a wonderful thing. You know that some years ago, I remember there was a person on the back, just over there in the corner, who fell asleep during one of the talks here. And unfortunately, somebody woke them up. They were snoring. If ever that happens again, please let them snore. Because this person was woken up, and afterwards, you know, they were told off, and they shouldn't have been told off. They said that they were having such a lot of trouble at home, such tension. They hadn't slept for many days, and in here they came here. They didn't know why they were coming here, but they felt safe in these premises. They felt so safe, they lay down to fall asleep. It was the first time they had a good sleep in a long time. And I thought, gee, please, next time, we talk about kindness and compassion and letting things be, let them be, because sometimes if a person falls asleep, it's not because they've heard all these jokes 10, 20, 30 times. It must be because they actually feel tired, so please let them, out of kindness. But what I was really impressed with, they felt safe here. And that's the most important thing to do. How many places do you really feel safe in this world? If there's a group of really good people who have strong sense of virtue, that's a place where you do feel safe, and it's quite rare to find those places in this world. And places where you can just be without being converted, without being asked for a donation, without being abused or sold something. It's great to have safe places like that, and that's what goodness gives other people. It gives them trust. It gives them a sense of, we don't need to have our guard up when you're around. We don't need to protect our valuables. We don't need to do anything. We can relax because you're a good person. Now that's important, to be able to give that to other people in this world, because I think you realize how rare that is. And that's one of the great benefits, you know, of being a monk, living in a community surrounded by such good people. I feel so privileged to be like in a community of other monks. Really good, you can trust them. They're not going to harm or hurt you one way. They're always going to care and look out for you. And even coming here in this Buddhist Society of Western Australia, which has been going for such a long time, you can trust other people. They trust you. We care for one another. We help each other out. That's what being good is. So I value those virtues so much that I practice those virtues. And because I practice them, that actually lets go a lot of stress in life, having to decide what to do. And, you know, is this the time to tell that white lie? Is it the time to just to follow just my heart and have that affair with that person? Is this, you know, if I don't have this affair, would it mean I'm missing out on life, on my one true love? No, come on, no, being good is more valuable than indulging in the pleasures of this moment. That goodness, that virtue, that trust of being someone who follows their commitments rather than someone who's untrustworthy, someone who, you, especially with your partner, of all people in the world, the one you choose to live with, your partner should be the one you trust the most, and also they can trust you. So you give them that trust that they know wherever you go, you know wherever they go, they're not going to do anything which is going to harm your happiness or break that trust. That degree of goodness is such a wonderful thing. I value that. I value that amongst more than anything else. Now, I'm going to just go off on a little tangent, but it comes to my mind that sometimes there's many parents here who want to know how to instill such values into their children. And sometimes we have the value of honesty, which is, in Buddhism, one of the fundamental values of goodness. In fact, the Buddha actually told his son, if you lie, you're just empty of all goodness. That is worse than probably anything else. And I understand this, and I think it's a great point for parents to understand. that always value truthfulness and honesty above so many more things. But what happens if, you know, a kid comes along and said, you know, daddy, daddy, you know, I'm taking drugs. What do you do? Do you value their honesty more than the drug taking? Or do you punish them for, say, taking drugs? If you punish them for taking drugs and they get into so much trouble for that, they're never going to be honest with you again. And I've noticed one of the reasons why children lose their sense of honesty to their parents is because they think when they tell the truth they're going to be punished. That's one of the reasons why husbands and wives lie to one another. Because they think if I tell my wife the truth, it's going to break our relationship. Now, what are you valuing most? You should value truth more than anything else. Son, it's a terrible thing that you're taking drugs. But you told me, that's wonderful, there's no punishment. Thank you for letting me know. Now let's see if we can work to solve that problem. Wife, you just told me you've had an affair with someone. It's a terrible thing to do. But you've at least told me the truth, you've been honest and open. That means the relationship can still be saved, because there's the honesty there. It really, what are we valuing in this life? If we don't value that honesty more than anything else, of course people aren't going to let us know what they're doing. They're going to hide those things they're afraid of sharing with others. And you notice psychologically, sociologically, how that hurts. So if we want to encourage goodness in each other, when someone is honest and they do tell the truth, even if it hurts and it's embarrassing, please just value the honesty more than anything else. I know they used to have that old story from the US history of George Washington chopping the apple tree down and father come and say, was it apple tree or cherry tree or some old tree anyway. Whatever, it's apple, let's call it an apple tree. He chopped his apple tree down and his father sort of, you know, said, you know, who chopped the apple tree? And he confessed. And of course his father never did anything. And I know somebody once said the reason why his father never did anything was not because he valued honesty, because George was still holding the axe.
Cynic.
But never argue with anyone or try and punish a kid when he's holding an axe. But no, the thing was, it was valuing honesty. And that, when I heard that as a kid, and even now, you realize that's the sort of thing the Buddha would say. At least you're being honest. You're opening up, because in honesty, there's always a way forward. So with goodness, please value honesty much more than we usually do. If a person sort of confesses, even though almost they should be forgiven, totally, rather than punished, because it's a wonderful thing. We need to encourage honesty more and more and more. Even with politicians, we always think politicians are always lying and lying. They're not always lying. I've known a lot of politicians. They're trying to do the best in difficult situations, but when they are honest, they're punished. They're voted out in the next election. So I think in our society, if we value honesty more, and we make that more important, then of course we'll have more honesty in our families, in our business, and also in our politics. So it's what we value. But also, I say that just not only bow to virtue, also bow to kindness. And this is even more important to me, because goodness actually is almost subsumed into kindness. Kindness is one of the biggest things in the whole world for me, and I value that even more than goodness, actually, because goodness is part of being kind to yourself and being kind to others, being compassionate, saying to that person who was sleeping, just be kind to them for goodness sake. Isn't that what we're trying to do in this place? Trying to encourage compassion and kindness. And it's the actions are more important than the words. So with compassion, with kindness, which includes forgiveness, which includes not harming oneself, not harming one another, that's what we mean about caring for one another. It also means being kind to yourself. And that means actually not judging other people. Not judging yourself, because compassion and kindness means giving everyone the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes we can be just so hard and critical of one another, not knowing what we, why a person did that or what they did. We don't really know the reasons why people act as they do, but we can be so hard and harsh, and I'm sure that many of you have been criticized so unfairly, even today, for something you never did, or they just misunderstood what you were doing and why you were doing it. So what kindness and compassion is this generosity of the heart to give the other person the benefit of the doubt and give yourself the benefit of the doubt. And this wonderful compassion and kindness, not just even to people, but even to what I would like to call to life. Because when you're kind to things, things actually change. Now, here's a little story. I'm sure the person who told me this story this afternoon, driving me in, hope you don't get embarrassed about this, but this shows the power of compassion and kindness. He said that when he was a student, he was walking past an ATM machine in a European country, and it made a sound at him. And he interpreted that sound that the ATM liked him. Who knows? But he said a few days later, he was sitting outside just by the ATM, and he was actually feeling like compassionate thoughts to the ATM. Why not? Compassion can go to everything. And he swears that this is what happened next. The ATM issued a 20 euro bill. Came out from the hole, he couldn't believe it. And he took it out and he waved it around and asked, you know, does this belong to anybody? There was no one around, no one had been in there for 5 or 10 minutes. So you see, even an ATM will respond to compassion. So I expect each one of you to be sitting outside the ATM tomorrow. May all ATMs be happy and well. Where's my 100 bucks? May all Well, he swears it happened. So he can be compassionate to all sorts of things. And I know that I was telling him that, you know, just my own experience, you know, when I was first, before I was doing all this teaching and traveling, you know, I was the main builder at Bodhinyana Monastery down at Serpentine. And of course, one of the best things we ever bought was a cement mixer. It saved us a lot of money because, you know, we'd mix all our concrete together, mix up the mortar, I'd lay the bricks. And that cement mixer, this is no joke, other monks would not be able to get that to work. But I would pat it. I admit that I patted it and said some nice words to it and pulled the string. It would work. It would. So it's true. You try that to your car. If you're cruel to your car, it will keep breaking down. If you stroke it, say, there, car, come on. No, I know you're tired. You've come all the way out. It's a hot weather today. And you come to the temple, and it's really, really late. No, you don't mind driving me home back. And it works. I don't know why it works, but it does work. So compassion. And also it means you feel much better. Maybe that's the reason why, because when you're kind to other people, you don't get this tension inside of yourself. So kindness is such an important thing for me. It's one of the most important values. So I'm more likely to forgive than ever to be critical. And some of the monks, they get away with I don't know what in monastery, because, you know, compassion is the most important thing. We've got a list of rules. The list of rules in the monastery. These are extra to the rules set down by the Buddha for all monks and nuns. These are the monastic rules, specific to Bodhinyana Monastery. And when we were writing that and formulating that, I made sure that the top rule, the number one rule, was be compassionate. More important than any other rule is to be kind. And I did that on purpose. Because I know I've been around long enough to know that all these other rules, so you have to do it this way, you have to do it that way. And even sometimes people actually, they feel hungry in the afternoon, they go and eat something. Or, you know, like one person on retreat, he confessed to me, fessed up, he went around some corner somewhere and smoked. Just come on. It's a bad thing to do to smoke, but I'm not going to punish you for that. I don't know why you did that. You have to have a reason, so fine. So that degree of kindness and compassion, it actually helps people become better people. It helps them to be good people. And I think if you ever got more compassion in your life so far, you would have been a much better person. You know that. So can you give that kindness and compassion to others? those of you with children, make compassion and honesty one of the most important things. Value it so much. You're going to be kind to your kids. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Forgive them. Even when they should be punished. You say, no, I'm not going to punish you. I'm going to be kind to you instead. That degree of kindness and compassion is so wonderful and powerful. It works even in the offices. If you're kind and compassionate to the people who work with you, and they can't come today because they've got to look after their elderly mother, whatever, if you really are kind and compassionate to them, they will pay you back afterwards with just being valuing you and your compassion so much, they want to help you back. In the same way that, you know, we ask people to volunteer for this and volunteer for that in this Buddhist society of Western Australia, you don't get paid for all this volunteer work you do, whether it's a busy bee at the nuns' monastery or just helping clean after the... You do this. Why do you do this? Because the monks and other people have been kind to you. Compassion creates this wonderful... I'm going to help you, you're going to help me, and we all help each other. Beautiful community. And I tell you that in a family, in a company, in a society, if there's no compassion and kindness, then there's no real society, there's no family, there's no real company. That kindness is so important. So I value the kindness, it's most important to me. And so I get much less stress when you're kind to the people you work with. You can understand why. When there's any hatred and anger and fault-finding, isn't that the cause of stress? It means there's more problems and business to be made. Kindness is one of the greatest stress relievers in the whole world. Just forgiveness. Being warm to another person rather than cold separates, tightens, stress, and sickness comes later on. But even more than that, when I bow down the third time, my third value, the most important value in... Oh, actually, you mentioned that was... I already went got to number three, I forgot peace. Peace to me is also the third thing which I value. I usually put that number two. First of all, I bow to virtue, then I bow to peace, then I bow to compassion. But again, peace. It's more important to make peace rather than have wars. And I'm not talking about wars between countries, I'm talking wars between people. To be able to make that peace between people. And how do we make peace between people? We never make peace between people by finding out who's right and who's wrong. You never find peace that way. Ah, I don't know when I last told that story, probably last week, I can't remember. But that story when the two monks were arguing about Buddhism. They're having an argument whether reincarnation is an essential teaching of Buddhism or not. And this first monk was saying, look, it can't be an essential teaching of Buddhism. We talk about being in the present moment, being now, the future's uncertain. You know, who knows whether there's reincarnation or not? It can't be important because Buddhism is all you can find out right here, right now, in this present moment. It's a good point. And the other monk said, no, the Buddha taught reincarnation. He remembered all his past lives. It's one of the things which you develop when you have deep meditation. You know, without sort of understanding about rebirth, we might as well all just, you know, indulge. When we die, we're all the same anyway. If there's no rebirth, what's the point? He said, there must be rebirth. It's an important part. And he had a point too. So they had this argument. And so in the end, they said, one of them said, look, I'm going to go and see the master, the Ajahn, the expert, and see what he says. So he went and see the master. And he gave his argument. Now, reincarnation, it's all about being in the present moment. You know, so reincarnation's got no part of this Buddhism. You know, when you meditate, you know, what's going to happen next, you don't worry about it. Just in this moment, right now, where you find all your peace and your truth and your wisdom. And the master listened to that and he said, actually, yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, you're right. And that monk felt so wonderful. He'd been justified. The master had agreed with him. So he went out to see his friend. You see, the master said I was right. You must be wrong. Yeah. And the other monk said, it can't be. I'm going to go see the master myself. So he went to see the master, and he explained actually the Buddha actually taught reincarnation. You know, it's part of dependent origination. It's one of the insights you're supposed to get. You know, it's part of, you know, the wheel of rebirth and reincarnation. And when he explained that to the master, he said, "Oh yeah, actually, yeah, you're right." So that monk went out and said, "See, the master said I'm right." Nah. He said he couldn't have said you're right because he said I was right. No, he said I was right. No, he couldn't have. So the only way they could settle the argument was go in there together. So they both went in there together to see the master. And the first monk said, "This is what I said about present moment is the only important time, and you know, we, you know, reincarnation is not in the present moment. Therefore, you said I was right." And the other monk said, "No, but you said I was right because wheel of rebirth, that's part of Buddhism." And then they both said, "Look, we can't both be right." And the master looked at them and said, "Yeah, that's right." Which is why I love that story. So it depends on which way you look at things, which perspective it is. And so, you know, what's right and what's wrong? And sometimes we have all these arguments, you know, and in the end you say, "Oh, just come on, let go, let's be friends and be compassionate and make peace." Because you don't settle arguments by who's right and who's wrong. You settle arguments by saying, "Let's put that in the past, let's let that go, and let's have some peace instead." And I value peace so much. You try and, if at all possible, let go of such conflict. It's one of the reasons why the Buddha said, "The world argues with me, but I don't argue with the world." Yeah, there's other conflict which people might make with you, but you don't make conflict back at them. You're a peacemaker. And if we can make peace in this world, it's not just peace in our families, peace in our countries, but more importantly, peace in our hearts. And frankly, that's probably, I will actually say this, it's probably there was a reason why I left this to number three. It's because even though it's the second thing I bow to, it is the most important value which I cherish. Peace. Simply because that when I meditate, I get to such deep degrees of peace and stillness. It's the most magical and wonderful thing. Just as an experience, they always say that peace is golden. And I did read in the newspapers the price of gold is going up. So I mean, the price of peace and the value of peace is going up with the price of gold. And I think it's pretty true, because peace is so hard to find in this world, its rarity means that its value does go up. What's rare does have a high value. And it's a great shame that people can't find peace in their lives. And for me, that peace is the goal of life. You know, you work hard during the week, why? To have a weekend, we can find some peace. Unfortunately, that sometimes in your house you have more work to do. Why? Because you've got two big houses with too many things which gather dust. Have smaller houses and then you don't have to spend so much time cleaning. Have fewer possessions and you don't have to spend so much time shopping. Have fewer desires and then you can have not so much time wasted trying to follow those desires. You have more peace in your life. So really, come on, you can get some more peace in your life by simplifying. And of course, as a monk, you simplify very much, but it was the peace which made me into a Buddhist. Now, the first time I meditated, you know, I mentioned this on retreats, because there are some things which happen in life which affect you so much you can never forget them. And it was in the Wordsworth room of King's College, Cambridge, in 1969, when I first did my first 5 minutes of meditation. Only 5 minutes, but that had such a profound effect on me that just literally changed my life totally around, because I felt some peace there. And it was hard to actually understand and quantify and sort of grab onto it what peace was, but it was a most wonderful thing. And of course, that's what I followed for the rest of my life. Followed peace as the most important thing of all. And of course, you find out how to generate peace. You can't control the world. Things go wrong. This is what life is. You know, you can't stop people getting old, getting sick and dying. Sometimes they die very young. Sometimes they die from all sorts of causes. That's part of life. And you have a choice to fight with life or make peace with her. What are you going to do? To fight with sickness or to make peace with sickness? What are you going to do? After a while, many of you have been fighting all your life. You've been fighting battles and you're just weary of more battles. You've been wounded so many times. Why? It's because you've been fighting. Battles which you can never win. A person has died. All the fighting, all the grief, all the anger. We all know we'll never bring that person back. It just hurts you more. All the anger about what someone's done to you, they've cheated you, they've abused you, all that anger doesn't affect them. It certainly does affect you. There's an old simile that when you get angry at someone, you try and hurt them. It's like picking up a red hot coal, throwing it at them to burn them. So many times you miss because your aim's not good. You don't know how to hurt another person. But you always hurt yourself by picking up that red hot coal. So after a while it doesn't make any sense anymore to get angry. So we just make peace. We take up peace as one of the most valuable things. So much value is given to peace that the first opportunity to make peace, to settle disputes, to say sorry, to ask forgiveness, or just to let it go, we take those opportunities, especially in battles which we can never win. When someone dies in a tragic death, a car accident, a suicide, a sudden heart attack, we make peace with that. Allow it to be. Allow it to teach us, rather than fighting it and wishing it never happened. And as a monk, you learn how to make peace with so many things in life. Because as a monk, because we have no money, because you know we have no credit cards, we have very little power. I can't even control what I eat. People just give it to me. I can't order. I can't sort of decide very much what I've got to do. I just have to do it. And because you don't have any control over your life, that's how you can make peace very easily. I can argue and think, why do I have to give a talk on Friday nights? Why can't the sisters come and give a talk? It's unfair that Ajahn Wayama's got sick and the other nuns aren't healthy and aren't old enough yet or experienced enough to give talks. Why can't some of the other monks give a talk? Why does it always have to be me? You know, you can always think like this. Why do people always want to ask their questions, the same old questions again and again and again and again? Why me? It is true, you know. All the time you come and ask me these questions, you know, I don't know how many thousands of times I've had, if you complain about hearing my jokes many times, that's nothing compared to all the stories which you keep telling me, all the same. But never mind. You can complain about those things and you can just make peace with them. So in the end I just realized I'm just going to make peace with things. I'm not going to fight anymore. I'm going to just to be peaceful, kind, good. And I found that's such a wonderful lifestyle to live. And it means I can make peace in my meditation. You know, sometimes when I meditate, I'm tired, I'm exhausted. Do I fight? No way. I make peace with my sleepiness. Sometimes you've been working very hard and many things are going through your brain, you're restless. Do I fight my restlessness? No, I just make peace with it. There you are, mind. You're restless, that's okay, never mind. You're really tired. Never mind, that's okay. Now try that. It actually works. And because I raise peace to such a high level, what happens? I have so much peace. When you make peace, you're building peace in your own heart and in around you, in whatever surrounds you. You're making this beautiful aura of peace inside and out. Peace is not something we just think about and just get and buy. Peace is something you cultivate. You cultivate it and it gives you the highest happiness. As you know, it's one of the sayings of the Buddha, peace is the highest happiness. And I can just vouch for that. much better than sex, much better than movies, much better than winning the lottery, much better than anything else in the whole world is peace. Which is why even many people think peace of mind. If I only had peace of mind, that's all I ever want in life. This is what we give here. We don't sell it, we just give it out for free. Peace. So that's the virtues which drive me, both in meditation, in life, in monastery or wherever I go. Goodness, compassion and kindness and peace. And of course those values are very simple. I know that I was reading that Obama was saying that the virtues of the pursuit of happiness, human dignity and freedom are very high value. But I think they're second to goodness, peace and kindness. I think that's much more important than the pursuit of happiness. Even dignity. Because sometimes I lose my dignity as a monk. Sometimes it's true that sometimes people call you all sorts of stupid names. Because, you know, as I keep saying, I'm dressed like a girl. So sometimes I've got no dignity left at all. But I don't mind losing my dignity. Because I've still got my peace and my goodness and my kindness. That's more important than dignity. Pursuit of happiness? What heck is pursuit of happiness? For me it's pursuit of peace, of goodness and kindness. That's what, to me, it's all about. So if ever I wrote a constitution for Australia, I'd write that we guarantee your right to the pursuit of goodness, compassion and peace more than anything else, and guarantee your rights to that pursuit. Because we hold those things in the highest of values. And that's actually classic Buddhist values. And if we take on those values, again, it'll lessen our stress enormously, create a much better world, and give us a path in which to guide our lives, to see if we can make more goodness in our life, be more virtuous, be more kind, be more peaceful. You know there's no limit to those things. You can take it to extremes of compassion, extremes of goodness, extremes of peace, and it just gets happier and more fulfilling. The more peace of mind, the more golden. So this is my little talk this evening on Buddhist values and how they can lessen the stress in people's lives. Thank you for listening. Okay, has anyone got any interesting questions about, or even uninteresting ones? Yeah, come on, I know I've heard them before, but please ask them. Anyone got any question? Yeah, very good. Well, there we go. Just for the... So everybody who listens to this on the tape said that when the ATMs first came out, you were with an elderly lady who actually saw the ATMs working, was amazed. There must be a little person inside there counting the exact money and giving it out all the time to these people. And of course you thought that she wasn't being serious, but now that you've heard the story of the ATM giving 20 euros to a very, very kind and caring individual, then maybe there is a person in there who actually recognized. So next time you go shouting at that ATM because your account balance is no good, no way is that ATM ever going to give you any money. So next time, be kind to the little person sitting inside there. Must sit there all day giving out money. That's a very good story.